Hello, good morning. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're ready. Here's some news. Did you know that Jesus is on the rampage throughout the world at the moment? There are, at the moment, 2 billion Christians in the world at the moment. That's amazing, isn't it? 2 billion. 70% of those are in the developing world. And so the idea that the Christian is, you know, a white male in North America, that's not the case. I listened to some statistics by a guy called Steve Nicholson. Steve Nicholson is a pastor of a church in Chicago, trustworthy guy, really, really nice guy. He said this, in Indonesia, did you know that Indonesia was the world's largest Muslim country in terms of the number of people who are there? In Indonesia, in 1970, there were 1.3 million people who were called themselves followers of Jesus. And today there are 11 million people. That's an amazing increase. In Nepal, in 1960, it was illegal to call yourself a Christian. You could not be in Nepal and call yourself a Christian. So there may have been a handful in 1960, but uncountable, so small. Today, there are churches in every single one of the 75 states that make up Nepal. There are over 500,000 Christians in Nepal at the moment. And Nepal's a tiny country. Okay, in Africa, how many people do you think there are in Africa who are becoming a Christian or turning to Jesus every single day? Give me a number.
Thousands.
Come on.
About
20 million every day? Wow, that's the faith I want to hear. Okay, conservative estimates are that every single day in Africa, there are 20,000 people becoming a Christian. And it goes up to 50,000. Some people have reported 50,000 every day. I mean, you know that Karen and I go to South Africa and our family each year. And well, we call it a ministry trip, but actually, I mean, Africa is just one big, you know, Christian health farm. We just get a lot out of it. In Korea, okay, in 1900, there was no Protestant church at all. It was considered a waste of time. You know, it was just hard, okay? Today, the population of Korea is between 30 to 50% Christian. There are over 7,000 churches in South Korea alone.
Wow.
There are some of those churches, and they have congregations over 1 million people. Guess where the biggest church in the world is at the moment? It's in Korea. So God is on the rampage. He's moving, okay? It happens to be mostly in the developing world. But wouldn't it be great if in 10 years' time, say, someone came up and did a talk, and at the beginning of the talk was a bunch of statistics, and in that were some statistics about the UK.
Yeah.
Okay? And it would be thousands of people in the UK coming to know Jesus every day. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
It kind of feels unbelievable, but actually it's not, because that's exactly what's happening elsewhere today. Isn't that great? So Jesus is on the move. So here's a question. Would you like to follow him? Would you like to be part of his plan to do what he's doing here? To do what he's doing elsewhere right here, right now? I'm there. I want to be part of that. When we're talking about speaking to people about Jesus, then, one guy immediately comes to my mind, at least, is a guy called Saul. He changed his name later to Paul, but he was pretty good at this. Yet Saul's the most unlikely a champion you could ever imagine. He hated Jesus. He was right next to Jesus as Jesus was dying and kind of scoffing. He went around killing Christians. Okay, but Jesus picked him to lead a campaign to tell the people who weren't Jews, well, the Bible calls them Gentiles. He led the campaign to tell the Gentiles all about Jesus. It's like God saying, I have a plan for the UK, for a revival of the Christian church in the UK, and I'm going to choose Dorkings to pioneer it. You know? It's like, it's just a weird guy to choose. So here's the thing. If you like, if you've got a relationship with Jesus, which is stronger than Dorking's, then you're up for this. This job applies for you. Do you see? So God's doing amazing things. And so the whole point of this morning's talk is about how and how great it is to talk to other people about Jesus. I'll knock a few misconceptions to one side. But for the most part, I want to talk about a single and critical premise on which this whole issue is based. It's a liberating, releasing premise. It's great. Here it is. When we talk about Jesus, we can do so with the sure knowledge that he is so beautifully infectious, so magnetic, that nothing that we can do or say will make him any more attractive than he already is. And that's it. When we talk about Jesus, we can do so with the sure knowledge that he is so beautifully infectious, so magnetic, that there's nothing that we can do or say that makes him more attractive than he already is. Doesn't that make our job easier? We have a job. Saul, who became Paul, he wrote a letter to a church that started up in Rome. That letter is in the Bible. It's quite unimaginatively called Romans. In Romans 10:14, we read this. How then will they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how will they believe in him of whom they've never heard? And how are they to hear without someone preaching? So this is Paul talking to people, some of whom will be a bit like you and me. How are people who don't know about Jesus ever going to ponder about him, think about him, believe in him or follow him if they've never heard about Jesus or if they've never had an accurate portrait of him portrayed to them? It's a logical argument, isn't it, really? And so for this reason alone, God calls all of us here, all of us who have a better relationship with Jesus than Dorkings does, to be part of this great plan to tell other people about Jesus, because if we don't, they won't get to hear. Now, Karen, my wife, and I, we've been involved, it's been a great privilege, we've been involved in the running of Alpha over these last few years. And during that time, we've become acutely aware that there are a few terms that are just needs a bit of thought. Okay, when we're talking about Jesus to other people, there are a few terms that need for us to think it through a little bit. Terms like Christian and Christianity. Because when we say these words, if I were to say them to some great friends of mine who I know are they believe in Jesus, I know that they'll kind of understand the same meaning about Christianity as I do. But for a whole lot of other people, the word Christian is associated with a whole lot of bad stuff. So let me give you an example. I typed in the word Christian into the Guardian online newspaper, and here are the articles that came up. Just a few of them. Christian. Lessons on sustainable living with the Green Monks of Mucknell. Australian senator names priest accused of rape. Bishop of Derry calls for end to celibacy in the Catholic Church. Brazil charges church leaders with embezzling millions from the poor. Bishop of London denies that suggesting Rowan Williams should retire early. So that's just a few days ago. That's what I typed in. That's what came back from the word Christian. And it has absolutely nothing to do with what I would like to be talking about when I'm talking to people about Christianity. I want to be talking about Jesus. And if what they're hearing when I'm saying the word is Christian is all this sort of stuff that the Guardian's telling them, then we're talking about two different things entirely. We're not on the same hymn sheet, as it were. So, and there are other words that fit into this issue box. That's not to say, by the way, that we don't use the words Christian. Okay, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying we have to think some of this through. Church is another word. I'm not saying don't use the word church. I use it all the time. But just be very aware when you're saying it to someone, do they really understand what you're talking about? Here's another example. There's a book, this book here, which is called Speaking of Jesus. It's by Carl Medeiros. And it is an excellent book. Carl Medeiros planted a vineyard church in Beirut in Lebanon, except for he didn't call it the Vineyard Church, and he didn't call himself a Christian. I mean, he just wouldn't last very long if he did, you know? The connotations of, you know, Christianity and church out there are not good. He speaks in a brilliant way on this whole area of talking to people about Jesus. This book is on sale out there. I've got armed guards on the bookstore, so you can't go there now, okay? But immediately after the ministry time, my recommendation for you is to form an orderly queue so you can buy one of these green books. It is now the only compulsory reading material for people who are helping out with Alpha. Nothing else. It is absolutely fantastic. It's a really, really good. I recommend it to you. Here's just on the matter of what words we use when we're talking to people about Jesus. Don't use long theological words. Only use words that you first heard on Coronation Street. So, a little bit about... I wanted to tell you how some of this has affected me over time. So a little bit about my history. I was brought up in a Christian family. My parents are Christians. They still are. They went along to an Anglican church. And so for the first 17 years of my life, I went along to an Anglican church. It was great. I met God there. It was a bit boring, to be honest, but I think it was great, actually. I met Karen there. That wasn't boring. That was good. But I learned all of my Noah stories, and I got to a position whereby I was able to sort of have my own beliefs quite apart from what my parents were telling me, great as they are, but I was quite independent with my faith. And once I'd sort of sorted all, you know, my doctrines out, I thought I was in a good position, you know, to argue my point, you see. So, I have to say, I did understand the issues of, you know, grace. I knew that it wasn't right to force-feed people my views on these matters. I knew that wouldn't work. But at the end of the day, I really wasn't very successful. And that was mostly because I had the view that I was right and that they were wrong. And that gave me a superiority, you know, complex maybe. No, I felt superior to other people. I didn't mean to. I didn't think it all through that much, but that was how it ended up being. But not a lot of people thought, you know, who I spoke to became avid followers of Jesus as a result of me speaking to them. So I thought, well, if I gen up, you know, on some theological issues, if I got to grips with what people are thinking in this time and in this age, and if I develop my grace and all this sort of stuff, maybe I'd get better. And I didn't, because I still maintained the fact that I was right and they were wrong. I still felt, you know, better. So I'm delighted to be able to tell you that I've been working hard on this over the years. And these days, actually... really, I make it a lot more simple. All I do now is talk to people about Jesus. Not a lot else. And I love doing that, actually. And it's easy. I just find it much more easy. I don't have to be, you know, God's personal defense lawyer. I don't have to, you know, champion a church history. Okay, I don't have to know all about, you know, what's happened in the past with Christianity. I don't even have to know all the big long words or be good at it. All I have to do is be a friend of Jesus. I mean, really, that's all it is. And I talk to people about Jesus and how I think he's great. That's all. It's kind of simple. So here's a few things which it's a couple of questions which I've asked myself and which I found have been very helpful. The first is, who are we speaking to? And the other one is, do we have any time? So, who are we speaking to? Well, at the end of the day, it is good to understand who our audience is. What do our friends think about? It helps us to avoid being arrogant or brash or weird. That doesn't happen with me. I'm weird, whatever, you know. But Paul knew how to speak about Jesus to the people who he was wanting to speak to. That's what made him very, very good at the job. Okay, that's what made it come very naturally to him. And so here's a couple of observations that I have of people who aren't necessarily followers of Jesus in the West here today. Either I think that people don't really believe that there is a God that exists at all and we're just stardust in some way, or that their God is some kind of initiator. He's wound up the world and he's let it go and he's stood back and he's now looking at how it sort of unfolds. But he's not directly in contact with it anymore. He's not a personal God. He's distant. Okay, this is a huge generalization, and it doesn't do justice to the whole area. But I think, by and large, a lot of people have one of these two, you know, they fall in one of these two areas, or a good bit of that. That's my observations. And what that means is that feeling distant from God, that hurts. And that's because we as people, we're designed to have relationships with other people. We're designed to have friends and family and to be close with other people. And that's even more the case when we're thinking of God. We're designed to be attracted to God. And so when he is distant, it hurts. And that's why we are running Alpha. Because people who are hurting, they ask the question, is there more to life? That's the slogan that we're using here at the moment for Alpha. Is there more to life? Alpha, as you know, well, you may or may not know, Alpha is a place where you can come along and ask your questions. You can learn more about who Jesus is and his impact, his relationship with you. That's what it is. You've heard earlier on that there are two Alpha courses starting up in the next couple of weeks. One is on a Tuesday evening. That's being run by Dave and Sue. There's Dave. Hand up high. And Sue's around here somewhere, I think. If you would like to know more about that, after buying your book from the stall, go and see Dave and Sue. There's another one for people who are they either live or work in the town centre, or you just like the town centre. That one's being run by Nigel Tapp. Where's he? If you're interested in going along to that, if you're interested in Jesus in any way at all, speak to Nigel. But I wanted to ask us a question. How are we doing? How are we doing at being attractive to people who aren't followers of Jesus or who are just playing with some of these ideas? You know, my observations, again, it's just my thoughts, that we're getting a whole lot better. In fact, we're getting quite good at this. Let me give you one example. There was a guy who came along to our last Alpha course, and he came along with his girlfriend when it first began. He came from Perth in Scotland, just to come along to my house. So he came along and he thought, well, this is good. I quite enjoy this. And then his girlfriend, I think she went off traveling or something, and he came along again from Perth. And he kept on coming every week. He traveled from Perth to Leeds. Now, he was able to make some arrangements with his business such that he was able to come to Leeds every Monday, as it was then, and turn up. And so after this, I said to this guy, so what's happening here? What do you think about all this God stuff? And he said, well, to be honest with you, Alex, I'm not in a position to make any commitments now, and I still have questions which I want to, you know, tackle. Fine. But he said, what was really great was the fact that I really like it here. I felt very welcome here. I felt as though I was able to ask some questions and that people didn't judge me. and that people just included me. I felt as though I could belong here, and I don't actually believe some of the stuff that you believe in. And my heart was delighted when I heard that. I would love for him to say, yeah, let's go and pray for Jesus right now. But for the time being, I mean, that may never happen. And I'm not going to force that. That's his choice. But I was delighted that he felt comfortable to be at Alpha so much that he was prepared to travel from Perth each day. It just made me feel great. So here's the other question. Do we have time? For a lot of us, we have a lot on. We have jobs. We're full-time people that look after parents or children. We just have a lot during our day. We have crises to take care of. We have teenagers to ferry to parties and then taxi them back again at 2 in the morning. We have to eat and sleep. And then there's church. I mean, there's so much you could get involved with, and I know there's so many things you are involved with. At the end of the day, once you've watched your episode of 24, which isn't relaxation, it's just recovery, where's the time? So unless we make time to socialize with new people, or unless we find opportunities in our weekly routine, maybe work colleagues or maybe people who we meet at the school gate, to contact with people, then all of this is just academic, because unless we provide opportunities to implement this, it's not going to happen. Here's the thing. Unless we make conscious decisions to be in control of our time will be just in control of us without us even knowing about it. Meeting new people, finding opportunities to speak to new people is an important thing that we have to deal with. I know that there's a lot of people here, I've heard stories, who have taken up new sports, new hobbies, just so they can meet new people. Carol and I have over the last few years, taken up the art of geocaching. Okay, now if you don't know what that is, after you've bought your green book, come and see me. I'll explain to you what geocaching is. It's not nerdy. It is incredibly cool. And we spent many an hour inviting our friends who don't know anything about God or anything about geocaching for that matter. And together we walk around the countryside looking for hidden treasure. And guess what comes up in our conversations without us having to push anything whatsoever? Jesus. And it works for us. We love it. In fact, I would go so far as to say that if Jesus was here now, he would go geocaching. I'm almost certain of that. In fact, I think that God would have quite a social life. I think he'd play poker with the lads. I think he'd kick around with the boys. I'm sure he'd go to a car boot sale every Saturday morning so that he can meet up with his buddy Jonas on the corner who sells carpentry equipment, and he can talk about how much people appreciated good quality back in the old days. I think that Jesus would be a social person. But here's the point. It's incumbent, and it's our joy, to talk to people about Jesus. And what that means is we just tell people how wonderful, how glorious Jesus is. Did you know that all the stories in the Bible are basically different ways of God telling us how much he loves us, how much he wants to be restored back to a wonderful relationship with himself? He's like the ultimate dad who just wants the very best for his kids. And he spends his time, he stays up of a night thinking, how am I going to make my kids smile? What's going to be good for them? That's what he does. You know, when he said, I'm preparing a place in heaven for you, that's what it's about. How am I going to make my kids happy? What's good for them? Here's Jesus' manifesto. When he came to earth, so that he could die and then rise again from the dead, and that was so that our sins and all the punishment that we deserve can be removed, can be eliminated, which allows us to have a relationship directly with God. That's why he came to earth. But this was his manifesto. This is Jesus speaking. The Spirit of the Lord is on me. Because he has anointed me, God has anointed him to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind. He set at liberty those who are oppressed to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. People taking notes, that's Luke 4:18 to 19. That was Jesus' manifesto. In other words, that year of the Lord's favor was, he's coming to bring about a new era, which is kind of a bit like now, but better. In fact, it's the perfect version of now. It was how the world was always meant to be before sin came around, before we messed it up. It's absolutely fantastic. It's not just white, although I like white, actually. It's not just white and boring. Heaven is amazing. That's what Jesus is talking about. It's a state of being with God. Heaven is a state. When my kids go to bed of a night, I like to sort of infuse in their minds what heaven is like so they can dream it through. And I say, guys, I've got two kids, got two boys, they're both at primary school. I say, guys, heaven is like Nerf guns. Do you know what Nerf guns are? Okay, they're those little polystyrene bullet things that you fire. Okay, and they run around the house and they have these guns and they fire Nerf bullets everywhere. It's fun, it's great. Heaven is like a Nerf gun that never runs out. In fact, heaven is like having a Nerf tank or flying a battleship Nerf aircraft. That's what heaven's like. It's having chocolate ice cream for breakfast. Heaven is where you don't have to have haircuts. It's where the school teachers do what their kids say. There's no homework. And I say to my kids, the best thing about heaven, the very best thing about heaven, is that they can get to speak and see Jesus face to face. Not even as part of a crowd, but intimately, how it was always meant to be. That's what heaven is like. It's not white and boring. It's amazing. It's absolutely fantastic. And it's why millions of people throughout the world today are saying, yeah, I'm up for that. We'll get to see exactly why they're turning to Jesus, because he's so amazing. Here's the thing. God's love for us is so infectious. His grace is so magnetic. His love is amazing. We cannot overstate it. We cannot go past a mark where we are exaggerating God. It's just impossible. He is the supreme superhero of the day. He's the premier crew. He's amazing. And he's absolutely besotted with you. Isn't that great? Why don't we tell everyone about that? And so as for me and my house, we will always love Jesus. We just can't do anything else. And so when you speak to your friends about Jesus, do so with the sure knowledge that he is so beautifully infectious, so magnetic, that there is nothing that you can do or say that will amplify him any more than he already is. That's all. Let's dwell on that for a minute. Let's let that sink in and just see what God is saying to us.